You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
January the 23rd, 2020, the impeachment trial continues. More testimony today as the Democrat House managers present their case. They'll probably go through today and again tomorrow, and then the Republicans will start. Is anyone watching? Anyone really paying attention? I'm monitoring it for you, but I mean, it gets pretty boring. In fact, Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas noted, if you watch the first 90 minutes the other day, you got the whole thing. You got the whole thing you're going to hear from the Democrats, because now it's just repeat, 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 because they had nothing new. They have nothing new. I'm looking at a piece that appeared today in USA Today. No, I'm sorry, that's the wrong source. Let me get this other source. Here it goes. This is a piece that was written for the Washington Examiner by Kaylee McGee. And I think she has nailed it. Titled, Adam Schiff Seems Afraid That Trump Will Win in 2020. And then the opening line, House Intel Chairman Adam Schiff's primary responsibility is to represent the interest of his voters, but he only cares about what one person thinks, Adam Schiff. And then she goes ahead and points out that Schiff is spending all his time as to why Trump should be removed from office, that he tried to use his power, so forth and so on. And then he announced, for precisely this reason, the president's misconduct cannot be decided at the ballot box, for we cannot be assured that the vote will be fairly won. They're already starting another election collusion story. Now, of course, he knows the Senate is going to vote to not hold Trump on impeachment charges. And he's laying the groundwork that, as they had indicated yesterday, even Gerald Nadler, speaking to the senators yesterday, pretty much suggested, as has Adam Schiff, if you don't vote the way we think you should vote and impeach him, then you're guilty somewhat of a conspiracy. That was crossing the line. That's over the line. There are some things you do not do, and that stand in front of the Senate and say members of the Senate are treasonous if they don't vote in what I believe. They got a reprimand from Supreme Court Justice yesterday, and he kind of threw the Republicans in with it for good measure, but the blame and the finger-pointing should be directly at the Democrats. We're going to break down more of it for you, and by my analysis and breaking it down for you, I can save you a lot of time, a lot of wasted effort in listening to what's happening. We do know, and we're seeing evidence already, that Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, of course, running for the Democrat ticket, representing the Democrats in the run for the White House, spending a ton of money, and now his ads are shifting. They're shifting from what they've been saying, Michael Bloomberg can do this, he can do that. They're shifting and portraying that you got to get rid of Trump. We'll get into that for you. In the meantime, I want to share with you that there's some things going on right now inside this country, and Democrat candidates and liberals across the nation in their various blue cities and blue states are aiding and abetting in making the U.S. more dangerous. It has to do, obviously, with illegal aliens and what they say they can and cannot do, and how they look at illegal aliens versus you, American-born. And they're making us more dangerous. We've got clear examples of it. We'll be joined by Fred Flights. Haven't had him on for a while. He's with the Center for Security Policy. In the midst of all this, I don't want you to forget Iran. And, of course, when we took out Soleimani, the threats made against our nation, our U.S. forces, and American citizens everywhere. Fred's going to bring us up to speed on that. And another story I've been holding, I just didn't have time for. During the national during the football college championship, a teacher of the year. The teacher of the year was there, and the teacher of the year did something that no one really called out at the time. And it's just as well. I wouldn't want to give additional air to her, but I still want to deal with it. We'll get into that. And taking telephones away from kids, cell phones from them, some are now saying you're going to need psychiatrists to work with these kids to get them through that, separation. Really? Oh, and this news, President Trump says he will join the March for Life crowds tomorrow. That will happen tomorrow on the 47th annual March for Life. He said, see you on Friday. Big crowd. They're happy about it. We've got a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Wellington Environmental specializes in making your world safer, finding, removing threats to your health. In one facility, occupants were getting sick, but only in one portion of a building. And Wellington Environmental was asked to investigate and soon found air conditioning units in the rooms only in that side of the building were blowing cold air loaded with mold. The AC units in that part of the building were pulling air from a stagnant pond. Mystery solved, threat resolved. That's just one of many Wellington Environmental stories. And then there's a hospital that was going to have to close because of a water main break until Wellington stepped in to help. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Some folks are born, made to wave the flag, cool their red, white, and blue. And when the band plays, hail to the chief, cool that point the cannon at you. Now, it ain't me, it ain't me. I ain't no Saturday song.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Here's your red meat. More on the impeachment. Tear into it. Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler have been very good at calling Trump and his allies and Republicans liars. And, of course, Adam Schiff has his own great reputation for lying, misstating, rewriting history and facts, or ignoring them. In fact, yesterday he said, I'm only going to speak for about 10 minutes. And you could see lawmakers snickering. You're really right. 10 minutes on what? One sentence? And then he began to lay out the case as the way they see it against the president. And they continue doing it today. But it is the same old, same old. Although it's escalating in some areas. As I mentioned in the opening monologue, and I agree with the writer for the Washington Examiner, Schiff's primary responsibility at this time is who cares about what one person thinks, and that's only himself. But then that one part, that the president's misconduct cannot be decided at the ballot box, for we cannot be assured the vote will be fairly won. In other words, you cannot vote for Trump in 2020, even if he gets through this impeachment. You cannot vote for Trump because you'll be part of a conspiracy scandal. He just has no confidence, or very little, in his party's ability to defeat Donald Trump. Well, in that, I share the same thought. They should have little or no confidence. There's no one in the party capable of standing up to President Trump. Bloomberg spending $250 million already, $250 million. As I said, he's beginning to shift his ad campaign. We'll get into that in the next segment. But you've got House Intel Chairman Adam Schiff once again focusing on Russian collusion. we beat this thing to death for 2.5 years, and it came back nada, yep, nothing. But he continues to do it. And in fact, during his not 10 minutes opening speech yesterday, but more than 2 hours, Schiff repeated the word Russia, Russian, or Russians about 30 times, often referring to the Kremlin and also Russian President Putin as well. This is their battleground, and they think this is going to work for them. They're not even arguing the merits of the case that they brought over on, quote, and there has no case, that's why they have no merits, but the president abused his power and obstruction of Congress. No, we're back to the Russian collusion thing. Here was Schiff yesterday, harking back to the campaign as Trump made some remarks. Please listen.
We also took this step with the knowledge that this was not the first time the president solicited foreign interference in our elections. In 2016, then-candidate Trump implored Russia to hack his opponent's email account, something that the Russian military agency did only hours later. Only hours later. When the president said, hey, Russia, if you're listening, they were listening. Only hours later, they hacked his opponent's campaign.
He's talking about Hillary Schiff and her email and her email server. Remember when she turned over everything she said was relevant, and that was something like 30,000 emails she held back, said, well, they're not relevant to any part of the investigation of my server and what I transmitted. These are personal things like planning Chelsea's wedding, my yoga class, curtains for my room. She decided that they weren't relevant. And Trump was saying, hey, if you've got those missing emails that she hasn't turned over, let us have them. And that's a joke. It's a joke. But Schiff says that was a clear sign. Go dig into her email server, and within 30 minutes it was hacked. Now, I'm not sure I'm buying that part of the story, but let's say it did. That doesn't really mean Russian did it, but aside from that, it was a joke. They said, hey, Russia, why don't you guys go jump off a cliff? Think they'll go do it? According to Schiff, they would. And Schiff's big premise is talking about how fair this trial is going to be in the Senate. And, of course, that gets back to their point that if we don't get to call witnesses, it won't be a fair trial. Adam Schiff again.
He's not allowed to introduce evidence of his innocence. It's not a fair trial. So, too, for the prosecution. If the House cannot call witnesses or introduce documents and evidence, it's not a fair trial. It's not really a trial at all.
No, it's not really a trial at all. It's a circus as it was in the House. And, of course, here he is talking about that if the president's not allowed to call witnesses and we're not allowed as prosecution call witnesses, it won't be a fair trial. Congresswoman Stefanik, Republican of New York, says Adam Schiff suddenly knows the meaning of the word fair, not when you look back at what they did.
If you take a step back and really remember the House impeachment proceedings, mm-hmm. Republicans were not able to call our requested witnesses. So Adam Schiff is being completely hypocritical. The only thing he has said that's accurate is that this is an unfair trial. It's unfair to the president. If you think about this impeachment process has been going on for 70 plus days. Right. Yesterday was the first day that the president's legal team was even able to participate. Right. That is unprecedented. That is not how the precedent was for both the Clinton and Nixon impeachment. So the person who limited witnesses was Adam Schiff.
That's true. That is absolutely true. But they would have you believe that everything we did in the House was fair and proper. And in the Senate, we should be allowed to call more witnesses. No, actually, you make your case in the House. That's where you came up with the articles of impeachment. And you should not be allowed to enter new witnesses. But if you do, as Senator Ted Cruz has said, if we decide to go that route, and with the senators taking a vote on it, and after they hear both for the Democrat side for today and again another 8 hours tomorrow, and then the Republican side for 24 hours spread out over 2-3 days, then they will probably take a vote on that issue. And Senator Cruz said, if we are going to call, allow the prosecution, the House Democrats, to call witnesses, we want reciprocity. We want to call one for everyone you call. And to that extent, Congresswoman Stefanik is warning the Senate Dems, you want to drag out this impeachment trial? Then maybe we would, maybe we should call Hunter Biden. Maybe we should. She said, I also think we need to hear from the whistleblower. Those are the two most important witnesses from my perspective. I think we should have heard from them in the House. She's absolutely right. We should have heard from them, at least the whistleblower. But once they got to that phase, they suddenly said, we don't need no stinking whistleblower. And why? Because he's got a lot of baggage. Real Clear Investigation pointed out that this is a former CIA operative and that he had, within hours, if not days, of Trump being elected, started talking about ways to impeach him and get him out of office. So I'm sure when he came forward, he was doing just his patriotic duty and not a partisan duty. But they continue pushing. Stefanik pointed out something else that I think you would agree with. She said, when I talk to my constituents, and again, she's from New York, they're sort of tuning this out. They think this is a waste of time. They want us to get back to legislating and doing the people's work. And they're excited about the results the president has been able to deliver. See, that is something that the Democrats just don't really want to face. The way our economy is going, Wall Street, your 401k, jobs, the lowest unemployment for blacks in American history, wages going up without being mandated. They're going up because of competition. Free market does work. Democrats have a hard time battling that. So they just try to ignore it. Or if they talk about it, it had to go back to what Obama did. Obama never thought we would have great growth again. He flat out said, Trump talks about great growth. What's he got, some magic wand? We're never going to see the kind of growth that he's predicting. Well, I guess he had a magic wand because we are seeing it. And yet we've got all of these senators still tied up in that event. I mean, I'm looking at some of the comments that came out of that. But before I get into it, there's something else Adam Schiff did. He basically is warning that Russians could attack the U.S. if Trump remains the president. They would attack us if Trump remains the president. You talk about a reach. Well, to that extent, Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas was also one of those having to listen and go through all of this. And he said, "Your eyes begin to glaze over."
After an hour and a half of it, you heard the entirety of the Democrats' argument today because they repeated themselves from the first thing this afternoon to the last thing this evening. If they had genuine evidence of wrongdoing by this president, you'd think that they would just stand on that evidence and then let it stand. But rather, they kept repeating themselves time and time and time again because they did not prove their case in the House of Representatives. And as you say, what this really gets back to is, one, anger that the president won in 2016, and two, frustration the president, as the elected president, gets to direct the foreign policy of the United States.
And during this, what should I call it? I'm trying to find it's a circus. As the Democrats continue their circus act now in the Senate, many of the senators, of course, keep in mind, the senators cannot have their phones with them. They cannot be texting. There are several restrictions on them. They've got to be in the chambers. And to that extent, there are four senators I'm sure would love to be outside. Of course, all of them would rather be anywhere else. But four in particular, that would be the four running to carry the Democrat banner into the election against Donald Trump. Senators Warren and Biden and Klobuchar and Bennett. They can't do a thing. They've got to have their surrogates go out and campaign for them. and they could be losing valuable campaign time. But they got to sit there and listen. And in many, yesterday as it was underway, and again today, senators just sitting at their desk, as a rule stipulate, some would stand occasionally, stretch your legs, stand behind the desk or against the back wall of the chamber. There was a Democrat in the back row that someone noted was leaning on his right arm, covered his eyes, and stayed that way for nearly half an hour. I would imagine sleeping, and I would understand. Oh, and also, they cannot have anything but water or milk. Now, there was a time until 1966, during a impeachment, you could only drink water on the floor of the chamber. And that year, Senate Minority Leader Everett Dirksen, Republican, Illinois, said, can we have a glass of milk? It says, it against a violation of the rules of a senator for Illinois, wants one of the pages to go to the restaurant, bring him a glass of milk. So they allowed that, so they can have water or milk. And that raised something for Senator Cotton, that what if I dope my milk?
I guess I could have put some vodka in it, minus the
Kahlua. I was
going to
say, that only way to get through it.
Yeah, it would have been a White Russian, but I think Adam Schiff might have accused me of collusion if I'd had a White Russian to drink.
Oh, he's right. Russians everywhere. So sit there, sip your water and your milk, and be bored. We'll take a break. I want to tell you how the Democrats are looking at battleground states and how they think this impeachment is going to help them, and how Bloomberg is shifting his ad campaign, trying to get some impetus from this hearing. Please stand by.
Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton sponsors this segment. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. I'll see you at Red Fitness Lounge. Get details at redfitnesslounge.com. redfitnesslounge.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So Michael Bloomberg, considered the eighth richest person in the world, spending $250 million already on his campaign. $250 million. Now, President Trump tweeting out today, Michael Bloomberg is playing poker with his foolhardy and unsuspecting Democrat rivals. He says if he loses, he really means win, in the primaries, he will spend more money helping whoever the Democrat nominee is. So by doing this, he figures that won't hit him as hard, or they won't hit him as hard. In other words, he's saying that Michael Bloomberg is playing rope-a-dope with the other Democrats, and he's going to spend very little money. If he doesn't win the nomination, he'll spend very little money helping the actual winner of the Democrat primary. So says President Trump. Now, Bloomberg is shifting his ads, as I pointed out. He's launched a new impeachment-focused TV ad urging the Senate to remove Donald Trump from office. Again, this is additional spending of the $250 million and more to be spent. $250 million. Stop and think about that. But the ads, the new ones say, it's time for the Senate to act and remove Trump from office. If they don't do their jobs this November, you and I will. And he's pushing primarily in states that have vulnerable Republican senators, or what they consider to be. Gardner of Colorado, McSally, Arizona, Collins of Maine, Tillis of North Carolina. And you got to keep this in mind, folks. Do not forget, we need to make sure we have U.S. senators from the GOP side, elected and reelected, and put in control. Because if the Democrats continue to hold the House, then they get the Senate, even if Trump wins the White House, they will immediately move forward to find new grounds to impeach him. And then they will have a Senate controlled by Democrats, and they will probably steamroll it through. In the meantime, the Democrat National Committee is now spending millions of dollars in six battleground states. They're trying to help the eventual presidential nominee. They're going to add new infrastructure and organizers in Arizona, Florida, Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Those six states Trump carried in the 2016 election, and they see this as a key to defeating him in November. They did not do this in 2016. They had no similar program in place to help Hillary Clinton. They just figured she could run it on her own. They did not do that. So now this time, they think we got to get in, we got to lay groundwork. Here's the interesting point. As they're doing this, in the last quarter, the Republican National Committee outraising the Democrat National Committee. Democrats raising $28 million in the last quarter, Republicans $72 million. And all this impeachment charade and nonsense and the constant push to remove Trump is behind that, and it's going to escalate. And the economy's doing well. People have jobs. This is going to backfire on them. But do not take it for granted. You still want to be in there making sure you vote. We'll take a break. When we come back, Fred Flights will join us. The situation involving Iran and threats against the U.S. and the temperature, I should say, of the Middle East is, again, hot.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDruryLaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Welcome back. My guest is a 25 years with the CIA, Defense Intel Agency, Department of State, staff of the U.S. House Committee on Intel, author of The Coming North Korea Nuclear Nightmare that came out in 2018, and 2 years before that, Obama Bomb, dealing with the Iran deal. He's currently the president and CEO as a Center for Security Policy, Fred Flights. Glad to have you back on board, sir.
Hey, Larry, good to be here.
Well, I tell you what, I wanted to run through some of that background because I want the folks to understand your background on your knowledge of these things. And in the Mideast, you have extensive knowledge. Now, when we saw the other day the president make the decision to take out Soleimani, what was your first reaction?
I thought it was a long overdue step to take out someone who was responsible for maiming hundreds of American soldiers, injuring thousands more. He was behind the attack on the U.S. embassy. He was planning more attacks on U.S. targets throughout the Middle East. Why the Iraqi government even allowed him to in the country to operate there, I don't know. But frankly, it just showed the arrogance of the Iranian government that this person who under international sanctions isn't supposed to leave Iran was in Iraq at all. I think it was justified. It was a tough decision, but I supported it.
And I tend to agree. In fact, I fully agree with you. And as you pointed out, he wasn't even supposed to under UN had told him basically you stay in Iran, right? Because they did not want him going out around the nation. He already has his proxies, his terrorists out throughout the world, but they didn't want him to leave the state of Iran.
That's right. And there was an understanding when the Iran deal was agreed to in mid-2015 that he would abide by international sanctions and not leave Iran. And a month after the agreement was announced, he went to Russia to try to buy missiles from Russia. I mean, it's just one of many examples how the Iranian government and its officials were in blatant violation of the nuclear deal, and not just the spirit of the deal.
Do you agree with those who were saying that Soleimani was a bigger and threat and target than even bin Laden?
I don't. I think bin Laden was probably a bigger threat. Maybe Soleimani was a bigger active threat, given that bin Laden was responsible for the 9/11 terrorist attacks. I think getting him was a big achievement for the Obama administration. And
what about
Al-Akbar? For taking him out.
What about Al-Akbar?
I think Soleimani was more important. But I can see an argument that he's more important than bin Laden. But and certainly, as I said, as a current threat, I put him up there.
Well, we saw a lot of alarmists suddenly say, oh, my God, now you have done it. You've taken this guy out. The U.S. will be wiped off the face of the map. We'll be under siege everywhere. And, of course, immediately the people in the streets shouting death to America, things of that nature, as did the leader. And then they appoint another general who says the same thing. And we're going to see some action. And just because it's quiet now doesn't mean we won't see more. But was that overstated as to what really Iran can do or will do at this point?
Well, let's think this through. The president's critics are arguing that we can't take action against a terrorist state that has conducted acts of terror and is planning more acts of terror because it will respond with terror. Think about that. He was planning attacks against the United States, and the president sent a message. I think it was a well-calibrated message that he's not going to tolerate attacks to kill American citizens. After those missiles were being fired, which we could talk about in a moment, against U.S. bases, he didn't take the advice of people like Senator Graham. Let's just go flatten the country. He will take military action when appropriate. He does not want to get the U.S. into unnecessary wars.
And to that extent, as you pointed out just then, in response to Soleimani being killed, they did fire missiles into two bases, wounding some U.S. troops. And there was a question is if they really intended to hit any American troops or just do a show of force. But whatever the bottom line was, we had some troops wounded to some extent. And the president did not retaliate in full. Right decision?
It was a strange incident. Now, I've studied the Iranian missile program, and they have at least hundreds of missiles that are very, very accurate. They could have destroyed several U.S. bases if they wanted to. Now, firing these missiles at American bases was dangerous and reckless, and it did put U.S. soldiers in danger. But let's bear in mind that the Iranians gave us advance notice of this attack, and most of the missiles, in my opinion, deliberately missed their target. I think this was a show of force for domestic consumption. It was not a message to the United States. I'm not saying we should tolerate it, but for Trump officials who went out and said, well, the Iranians are trying to kill Americans, I don't see it that way.
You're listening to Fred Flights, President, CEO of the Center for Security Policy. Can we have, I'm looking at a piece written by The Hill by James Zumwalt, opinion that we can never have a friendly relationship with Iran the way we did with Vietnam when that was over?
Well, the National Security Advisor, Robert O'Brien, said recently that the economic pressure we're putting on Iran is going to get it to come to the negotiating table. I hope he's right. I just don't see that. I think the divide ideologically between the radical Islamists who run Iran and the free world is so wide that that government will never agree to negotiate in good faith with the United States. We may grudgingly get some kind of agreement on nuclear weapons someday. I'm not holding my breath. But you're right. In terms of a productive relationship with a former communist state like Vietnam, I don't think we'll ever see a relationship like that between the United States and Iran.
We had the people, many, that risking their lives going in the streets protesting against the leadership in Iran because of the sanctions and how tough situations are, and the forces firing back at them, not with just rubber bullets, live ammunition sometimes, killing, wounding many. And we've had the approach from the White House, basically, that we're not looking for a regime change, but at least a behavioral change. Are the Iranians in the streets, are they going to be able to affect that to some extent? I mean, are they tired of dealing and being subjected to religious rule leader as opposed to something they think would do better for them and make their lives better?
I think the Iranian people are disgusted at this regime. They are being brutally oppressed. You saw those massive rallies denouncing the United States during the funeral for Soleimani. But what you don't know is that the government bussed those people in from all over Iran and were almost immediately followed by massive protests against the regime. The people of Iran, at least 60% are under the age of 30. They don't want to live under this radical Islamist government. They don't want to live in a government where women are arrested and beaten for taking videos of themselves dancing or for not wearing a veil in public. The people of Iran, they know what's going on outside the country. They know this country has a system that they hate, and they're being kept down. And I think the day is coming when that government will be overthrown. I don't think that's in the near future. But in the meantime, the pressure we're putting on Iran, I hope, is going to curb some of its dangerous and threatening activity against us and other states in the region.
And to that extent, these sanctions, and we've stepped them up, and of course, part of our issue is to make sure other nations don't violate them and assist Iran through black market or whatever else. I mean, where do we stand on that? How many nations are actually obeying the sanctions we've placed?
I don't know. I know that European companies are reluctantly going along with them because they're worried that the Trump administration will sanction them. And it's funny that their governments are trying to find a workaround because they're mad that President Trump has reimposed sanctions on Iran, and European companies aren't going along because, you know, if you're Airbus or some other large European company, you can't risk losing business with the U.S. to trade with Iran. And I think that's the case for a lot of countries worldwide. They know that the Trump administration means business concerning these sanctions.
There, of course, following all of this, or in the midst of it, was that tragedy where they used Russian-supplied missiles fired by Iran, shooting down a Ukraine jetliner, killing all on board, and the fog of war, supposedly, that they didn't know if it was a missile or something coming at them from the U.S., because this followed right after they did fire those rockets. That kind of decision and mistake, how much is that going to count against the government in general for the people?
It looks like it counted against the government a great deal. The Iranian people completely blamed the Iranian government for that, and they were infuriated that the government lied about what happened concerning the downing of this airliner. And look, this is a situation that the Iranian government created. It chose to fire missiles at the United States and was concerned that President Trump was going to hit back. And frankly, if there were American fatalities that night, I think the U.S. response would have been devastating.
And we have a large amount of force already assembled around the region, including carrier groups nearby, correct?
Yes, that's true. And it's a show of force by us, but it does not mean that President Trump wants to attack Iran. And I know a lot of our conservative colleagues, Larry, are worried about that. The president will use military force if he thinks it's necessary. But my understanding is he really does not want to start a war with Iran if he doesn't have to.
All right. And I meant to ask this earlier. Short on time, but very quickly, do you think John Bolton will or should testify in front of the Senate because you served as an aide to him? Especially, I should say.
I haven't discussed it with him. Let me just say this. The Democrats should be careful what they wish for.
And you served as his chief of staff, so you know. Listen, Fred,
I
appreciate it very much. Thank you. We'll do it again.
Okay.
All right.
Good to be here. Thank you.
You bet. Fred Flights, President, CEO of the Center for Security Policy. That's a good word. You want to call Bolton in front of you, you better be careful what you wish for. I like that. We'll take a break. When we come back, what happened at the championship college football game that still depresses me.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So during the National Football Championship in New Orleans, of course, won by LSU, I was so happy about that, they also took time to honor Teachers of the Year from across the nation. The Teacher of the Year from Minnesota was along with the other teachers as they had the national anthem. President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump were also there. During the national anthem, the Minnesota Teacher of the Year took a knee. Respectfully, she said, "I'm taking this knee. I felt it's the right thing to do to have a respectful protest." Said she was motivated to kneel during the anthem for communities that are supposedly oppressed under the Trump administration. She said, "I feel our country is not serving the needs of all of its inhabitants." This president has lowered the black unemployment rate to the lowest in history. More minorities have jobs than before, and there are more jobs available if they want them and will train for them. And the income and the wages are going up. And this president did what other presidents have not done, and that's work to remove some from our prisons that are there for crimes that maybe nowadays would not be considered such a crime. And majority of those would be minorities. And this president also stepped forward with funding to help protect and preserve historically black colleges and universities. And yet this Minnesota Teacher of the Year knelt during the national anthem. I know it's been some time since that happened. I know that, and I've had it. I wanted to deal with it right away, but I've had so many other things going on. But I just don't get how she can justify that this president is not doing anything, that this administration is oppressing minority communities. Well, I guess really what it comes down to, if you're locked in that they're being oppressed, you're not going to change your mind. I don't know what it would take to change it. We do know that every poll is showing President Trump is going to pull even a greater number of black voters this time than he did last time, and he got 8% last time. We're looking at double digits, maybe only 10 or 11%, but that's a major accomplishment. And not only are they having to come out and support this president in the face of others, then they have to deal with other black Americans who call them out and say, "You're an Uncle Tom because you're running with a white man." I mean, who's the racist? Who is the racist? All right, I have another story here. This you could almost see coming. The Wall Street Journal pointing out that schools across the nation from K through the 12th grade are having to deal with separation anxiety for many of their students. Some of the students are just not able to cope because of rules imposed in their schools. And they're just lost going from class to class if they're making a class change. If they're lost if they have to sit in a classroom and they're not wanting to listen. They want something else to distract them, and they just absolutely are having separation troubles and difficulties. So now some schools, in fact, one of them already saying, we're going to bring in experts to help deal with this anxiety, this separation. What are they separating them from? Not their parents. No, they're cell phones. They're cell phones. Many schools are setting up charging stations in classrooms, so the phone will be there. The student can look up and see it, but it's got to stay on charge during the class. Some are coming up with lockable pouches that let the students hold their phones rather than have to leave them alone in their lockers, but they've got to be locked up and kept out of sight, cannot be brought out. And some teachers are dangling extra credit and other prizes say, if you'll stay away from your phone, not try to sneak it out and so forth, well, then we're going to give you some extra credit. We're at that point of this nation that we've got to worry about kids being anxious because they're separated from their cell phone during the course of the day, that they can't communicate, text, see, whatever they want to do. I didn't let my girls have a cell phone until considerably later than others, and that was some time ago. I mean, very few had them anyway, and I did it only with so we could stay in contact when they were somewhere and if they needed to call. And I monitored what they were calling and what they did. Now, yeah, I'm going to monitor it. I'm paying for it. I'm monitoring it. But I am looking at this story, and I'm thinking there's probably another place right now in this nation at this very moment that I'm speaking. There's a great deal of cell phone separation anxiety, not able to talk, not able to call, not able to get a call, not able to text. The U.S. Senate, as you're hearing the impeachment trial, they can't have phones inside the Senate at this point. They're anxious, believe me. In the next hour, what's being done that's making this country more dangerous? And then celebrities and how they're responding to this impeachment effort against President Trump. It's good for a laugh.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.